All right, welcome back to another edition of Mormon Expression. I'm your host, John Larson. I'm here joined by a very special guest, the one and only Zilpha Larson.
Hello. Hey, John.
Hey, how are you doing?
Doing all right.
We're here alone again in the fabulous Studio 1A.
Which is not in the basement.
Yeah, everybody comes to our house and says, oh, I thought it was in the basement. We don't have a basement.
It's a front den.
It's like an office. It's actually more like a library. There's a table. We posted pictures of it before. But
I know, but people still picture it in the basement.
It has windows to the exterior of the home.
True.
So it's nice, and it has a the standard amenities, a beer fridge, and everything else,
and a nice Mormon book collection.
Yes. Okay. Well, Zilpha, what are we talking about today?
Well, I think it's time to talk about resignation, formal resignation, as opposed to just sort of walking away. What are the pros and cons? And what do John and I think about it? And what are we going to do about it?
Yeah, this is sort of a half personal podcast. We've done a few of those over time and half sort of topical. I think as we talk about resignation, I think it's useful for us to go back to the beginning.
Wait, you always go way, way back.
Not way, way back. Just way back for us. So I was thinking about this earlier today because I knew we were doing the podcast. I went to high school like most people did. And during high school, I learned things like the theory of evolution, and I learned what a theory was. And I understood very clearly that evolution was absolutely correct, that there are millions and millions of independent pieces of evidence that come together in a non-contradictory way, that there is no controversy over the theory of evolution. I understood that at the age of 18. I also was a believing member of the church. I had no reconciliation for those two. And I think that faithful people extol the virtue of faith. And I think that in that aspect, I was a very faithful member. I had no reconciliation path. As a matter of fact, as a freshman at BYU, I purchased the booklet by Hugh Nibley, Evolution, a Convenient Fiction, which is a steaming pile of shit from front to back. And even without being a scientist, or anything like that, I could understand that thing was just plain garbage. I was embarrassed to read it. I was embarrassed for Hugh Nibley. I was embarrassed for the church to publish it. So I just lived with it, you know? Did you have anything like that?
The only thing that might come close to me, because I always tried to just learn enough about evolution to, you know, do okay on the tests, and I never really dug into the information enough to be able to understand it fully. So, but the only thing maybe close for me was the issue of masturbation. Because even though I felt awful about it for a long time, I got to the point where I really couldn't understand what the big deal was and why God would despise, you know, someone's masturbation behavior. That was maybe the only thing for me.
But the church is full of wankers. I mean, why did that one bother you? I mean, why was that a faith issue?
Well, it wasn't really a faith issue. It was just something that bothered me a little bit. Like, not intellectually, I hadn't allowed myself to dig into things deep enough for there to be cognitive dissonance about those kinds of things. But there was cognitive dissonance about you know, basic human sexuality that the church said that you can control 100%, and I knew that to not be true.
So I think these things for both of us just represent an example. As I went through school, as I went through life, and I know that we had lots of conversations during this time, every time the church came up against something that was contradictory, the church always lost. I mean, intellectually, the church never wins. And, you know, that goes for all religion. You know, the history of the Catholic Church has been a 2,000-year retreat against science. I was just reading recently the church in the 17th century declared beavers to be a fish so that people could eat them on Fridays during Lent. You know, every time the church, be it whatever church, comes out and makes a pronouncement on anything that can be typed or proofed, or it always loses, always.
Well, unless they're just pronouncing something that everybody already has established as truth.
Oh, yeah, yeah. You know, that's why new churches always do so well.
But anything controversial, they lose on.
Yeah. Or they
end up looking dickish, you know, 50 years later.
Well, they just end up looking naive.
Keeping the priesthood for so long.
Yeah, I think there's a couple issues there. They end up looking naive because they don't have any scientific basis. So as science progresses, then they look more and more provincial, and more you can see their patterns of the time. With things like social behaviors, like discrimination, the problem is churches are slower to change, so they codify stuff like that, and then they'll be hanging out there because their racist stuff doesn't go away when society says it should go away. So you know, I've used the example here before. You know, why do nuns wear Whipples? Whipples are those things that they wear on their head. The reason nuns wear Whipples is because when the movement of starting nunnery started, everybody wore Whipples. They were just dressing the way everybody wore, the clothing that everybody wore. And so that's what religion does. You know, I'm sure if Mormonism stays strong, you know, 300 years from now, Mormon missionaries will look like nuns. They'll be wearing this old-fashioned. Well, they do that way right now with their stupid bike helmets and their short. Who wears short sleeve?
Hey, you got to wear a bike helmet.
Who wears short? Not with a short sleeve white shirt and a tie and
a
backpack.
Yes. I mean, if you're going to wear if you're going to be riding a bike amongst traffic, you should be wearing a helmet.
You know,
regardless of how dorky it looks.
I have old missionary manuals from the 60s and the 30s and the 20s, and they all say the same thing. You know, dress in a way that makes you presentable and you know, you look like a business person. And then at some point, you get off the rails and you just sort of like religion starts doing things because that's the way they do them.
Right.
But anyway, we're getting off the rails ourselves. So Zilpha and I are both curious people, and we read a lot and talk a lot and watch documentaries. And as the years went by from the time we got married, more and more, as a believer, even a faithful believer, you're under constant assault. You can't pick up a newspaper and not find something that conflicts with your religion. You definitely can't read, you know, nonfiction, which is probably the reason that fundamentalist religions like the church try to fill up every time all the space that people have with weeding the beet farm and doing your home teaching and doing compassionate service and just all this stuff. Not that stuff's bad, but that they're just going to fill up every moment, so you don't have time to like consider and saying, does this thing make sense with the rest of the world? You were not paying attention, were you? What are you doing? What are you surfing porn or something?
No, I was looking at an article called When Children Have Chosen Another Way from Deseret News last year. Anyway, so what about the...
So anyway, as we proceeded through time, I want to emphasize the fact that we were both faithful, we were both believers, and we exercised a lot of faith in terms of making the religion work. And I had a distaste for apologetics at that point, because I could look at them, even though I was a believer, and I could see that they were manipulating science. They weren't consistent. They were very like attack oriented. You know, so they would attack the person, or you know, show that person drank coffee regularly, so you couldn't, you know, take his Sunstone article for seriousness.
Well, my biggest problem with the apologetic side of things was that they were representing a lot of times a Mormonism that was foreign to me, that wasn't the Mormonism I knew and the Mormonism I was taught in church.
Right,
so it really didn't make sense.
So I think we ride that wave, being believers up until about 2003, or 2004, Our children were adopted in 2002 and 2003, and we were still believing then, but we were having more struggles. And by that, I mean, it was harder to believe, and the church culture and practice just didn't sit well with us. But we were putting a lot of energy into making it work.
Like we said in another podcast, we put some of those questions and actually doing more research into the history of the church. When we started realizing there might be something to uncover there, we put it on hold while we waited for our son's adoption to be finalized and get him sealed in the temple, because there's such a...
When you say put on hold, I think more like we ran away from it. We got scared. We didn't want to lose our faith.
Right. We wanted it to be true, and we wanted, you know, the sealing things to be true. So we wanted that for our family. I remember making a conscious decision to stop looking at that historical. And we were only reading, you know, like the biography of Joseph Smith by his mother, you know, Brigham Young at Home by
Clarissa. We were only reading, I was trying to only read source documents.
That's what we were.
So we were reading journals and contemporary writings from the time.
But still, it was agitating our minds and affecting our ability to enjoy our church, going to church.
And the agitation was internally. Trying to make that stuff work was just intellectually and emotionally ripping us to shreds.
Yeah. And so we tried to get, you know, to get away from that stuff and get really full back into our believing selves.
Oh, we tried every pattern that you can. We tried, you know, doing extra special temple work, throwing ourselves in our callings. We tried going to Sunstone. We tried a lot of things. And for people who try to walk the middle path, and I want to come back to this, it's a miserable, miserable route.
When you say the middle path, you mean... not fully believing in the church, but choosing to retain activity.
Yeah, and I would define it further, saying there are a few core assumptions that the church is based on, like fundamental beliefs that are sort of necessary for the house of cards to work. And if you reject one or more of those and then still try to maintain yourself as an active member, you will be miserable.
Now,
I have met hundreds, and I've not met one who's happy.
But I have met people who might be more on the Jack Mormon spectrum of things.
Yeah, we're not talking about those guys.
Well, but some people might say, well, that's a middle way. But people who just go for social reasons, but don't really think about it beyond just this is my culture, this is my people, these are my friends.
Well, these people you'll know, because whenever you start talking about, let's say, polygamy or something, they'll just tune out. That they just don't want to hear it. That so their tactic is not to think
right about it. Right.
I was going to say not to think. Period. And then maybe it's their personality. They just don't give a rip. So they just don't care.
There might be other things that they like to think about, but religion is not one of them.
But, you know, the problem is, and I just hinted at it a second ago, there is a whole interdependency of these key ideas. And these key ideas are, for the most part, on their face, ridiculous.
Did you write your list of 1,000 yet?
No. I get to take an afternoon to write the list of 1,000 things I find wrong with the church. But, so many of the, and that's why the church backs away from them. You know, you read these 10, top 10 lists that come out that the church PR department says, you know, top 10 misconceptions about the church. And you see the spin and the lies and the
misconceptions they're spewing forth.
The propaganda machine is just out there. And what it's left is the poor thinking Mormons out there today are just, they've just got to be an intellectual, just tailspin. And you go into Deseret Book today and try to find, you know, books that are written that you know,
even hint at intellectualism.
Yeah, the golden age of Mormonism in the 50s and 60s, there was a lot of thought, there was a lot of writing going on,
and fluff and happy feelings.
It's just miserable. It's depressing. So we tried Then the year of 2004, a couple of things happened. One, our temple recommends expired, and we decided to let them expire.
It wasn't a matter of deciding to let them expire. We knew we couldn't answer the questions honestly, and we couldn't.
It wasn't like the worthiness side.
No,
it was to me. It was
do you support? Can you support?
Can you support the, you know, well, do you support the brethren? You have to sort of pledge fidelity.
At that time, I had even gone beyond my belief in Jesus as a, you know, as a savior figure. So, and I knew that was on there, and I couldn't do it.
But we're still attending church, and that year, I was the adult Sunday school teacher. I heard my dad once say they shouldn't call people to be adult Sunday school teachers because then they all leave the church, but... That's probably because they pick people who are, you know, more read or more intelligent about this stuff, and those guys are just more likely to leave the church. But anyway, and it was Book of Mormon that year, and I had had a lot of struggles with the Book of Mormon. To this day, you all probably heard me say, people talk about, well, how did Joseph Smith write the Book of Mormon? I've read the thing many times. I've read a lot of the stuff written about it. It's just not that impressive of a book to me. And it wasn't that impressive of a book to me when I was a believer either. You know, look at the center. Go ahead.
Well, if you read it like you're reading, what are those little things that sorcerers read? You know, they like dump out the, no, they dump out the bowl of bones and like then the runes or something like that. Like if you read it like you're trying to, you know, my brain's
cast a spell? What are you?
No.
You and like, your witchy ways.
Like you're in a seance. You sort of put yourself in a different state of mind and you're like seeking for knowledge from another realm.
Oh yeah, that's the value of the Book of Mormon. The Book of Mormon is so boring and dry that people will read it and their mind will wander, and then they'll be able to get personal inspiration because their minds are just thinking about other stuff. They think, oh, that's a great book.
Well, and it's all about obedience and humility. And
it's not even, you're giving it more credit than it deserves.
No, I mean.
So go look at, all right, the culminating event
and
is that.
And faith without thinking about it.
Jesus Christ goes, and so the Bible is all corrupt, right? We know that. Go read The Great Apostasy by Talmage, the Catholic Church, the horror of the world, and the all of Christianity is an abomination according to Jesus, right? So here we get this restoration, this pure book. It's been engraved on gold. It hasn't been touched by the world. Culminating event is Jesus Christ returns to his other people. Now find me one doctrinal gem in there that's not already in the New Testament. So you have the whole thing, just a regurgitation of almost word for word.
Of the Old and New Testament.
Yeah,
combined.
Yeah, but it, you know, this is the best that Jesus can do is just to
regurgitate. Well,
regurgitate,
you know,
a talk from 3 years earlier or whatever, you know.
That's all he's got.
Well, so anyway, as I systematically as an adult Sunday school teacher went through the book and I read the text very carefully and prepared the lessons and read whatever commentaries I could find on it. I would say I sort of marginally believed in the Book of Mormon. You know, I believed it to be divine. It wasn't very useful to me. By the end of that class, that was done. That systematic read of the book had dismantled it as any sort of historical book. You know, because like I would read about their battle tactics and then go, and in the Book of Alma, then go read up on battle tactics, and you know, you'd see that there's a lot of 19th century stuff in there. And anyway, so that was the one key event.
The one key event.
Well, that was one of the key events. I said in 2004 there were a couple things that happened.
Oh, that was for you.
Yeah, I'm talking about me.
I thought you were talking about us.
Well, I mean, I remember that we discussed this stuff quite a bit during that time.
Yes, and I would probably add in there that. At that time, so I had two babies under two, or at least under three, and it was not the paradise that I had been led to believe it was going to be. And it was disheartening, especially since, I mean, having children is just so for young women in the church, it's made to be this almost like a euphoric thing, like it's going to be nirvana when you have these children. And it's just like having another person, you know, around that you have to take care of, and you know that they have good parts and bad parts, and it's just not like heaven. And that really sort of, you know, that was my last thing that I was holding out hope for, that, you know, finally when I got my children that I had wanted for so long, that would just sort of heal everything, and the whole the church experience would have new meaning, and everything would be hunky dory. But that didn't happen.
Yeah. So at that time we started studying things that, you know, like we talk about. I wanted to write a history of one of my ancestors in Nauvoo, and you know, we ran into polygamy, and I decided I really want to get to the bottom of polygamy. That's what started the snowball of reading book after book after book after book, and that sort of gets like crack, I suppose. I mean, I've never taken crack. I guess I shouldn't use that metaphor. And then we moved. My company, we were up in Logan at the time. We didn't have any intention of moving. My company relocated, and we were kind of forced to move. So what that gave us is a chance to take a break and to breathe a little bit. And it's interesting. I know it's something that, like, Bob McHugh said years ago, that if he had never been released, he was released as a bishop, and that gave him time to think, to actually process some of the stuff. And he had a few months actually of downtime. Same thing for us. The fact that we weren't, you know, rushing in callings or having friends who we knew we'd disappoint in the ward. You know, we've met people who are living in the wards they grew up in and have to leave, and that,
yeah,
just
that's
must be
much tougher.
Miserable. But you know, whenever you get a chance to step away from it just from a little bit, oftentimes that sort of clears your head and you can see it with new eyes. So we continued on that path, and it wasn't long there until all of our faith was gone.
In religion. Faith in religion.
What do you have faith in?
You just said last week, John, that religion has accosted the use of that word, and we need to take it back.
Yeah, that's right.
And there are other things to have faith in, like, you know, you have faith that democracy is a better form of government than a dictatorship, and so on.
Well, actually, what I was saying is you're still using the faith word, like the bridge, the gap, or the jumping the chasm of not having enough knowledge to arrive at your conclusion. I still sort of reject that. There's faithful in the sense that you remain true to something. Like I'm, you know, I stay faithful to cheddar cheese. You know, I might have tasted Swiss, but I'm gonna be a cheddar man. That's the word. That's the use I was going after. So we did not resign from the church.
No, and when we discussed it, there were two main reasons. One, the biggest one was our families, which every one of you probably can empathize with.
So, I mean, to be clear, the church, this is another one of its cult techniques. The church will take, and it has membership, I think, review their membership records every year or two. You go to tithing settlement, they'll hand them to you. And it tells you everybody you're sealed to. So your children or your parents or whatever. So if you leave the church as an adult child, you can be a 60-year-old person, your name will drop off. It'll say, it'll on your mother's record, she will know, as far as the church is concerned, you will no longer be her child. So it, on her membership record, says these are her children,
and
your name
be dropped
your
off.
Name will disappear.
So it is not something that you can easily keep a secret from.
Nope.
Your parents.
And that is that way by design, I am sure.
You know, our parents already know that we don't believe in the church anymore, and that we no longer attend, and they know that we do Mormon expression. But actually having that sealing broken is going to be difficult for them.
People are falling in and out of activity. I read in, I think it's called it's a collection of social research done out of BYU. One of the researchers had said that 80% of LDS people will be inactive for at least a year, sometime during their life. So it's a huge number that at some point in their life will fall inactive, and then a good portion of them come back. So a lot of people, when their loved ones leave the church mentally, they walk out of church, they will go on believing that they're merely inactive, and then returning to activity is a trivial thing. You know, you just go back, start paying your tithing again, they'll give you callings right away, and you can be back in the fold in just a couple months.
And to make it a little bit even harder is that there is some kind of doctrinal myth. I don't know who said it. Basically, that if you're sealed to someone, you can yank them out of lower kingdoms and bring them up with you.
But, yeah, and it's in the Doctrine and Covenants that if you you're sealed by the Holy Promise and you sin, you know, as long as you don't shed innocent blood or deny the Holy Ghost, you'll be released to the buffetings of Satan for a while, and then you'll return, you know.
So actually having those sealings canceled and having your name removed from the church, having your you would have to be rebaptized if you resign, right? If you wanted to go back.
Yes. Yeah. If you resign, you can be rebaptized. There are people around who've done it. Don Bradley is one. You know, he resigned and proclaimed himself to be an atheist and was rebaptized. I'm sure the church would bring you back. You would probably impair your, you know, they'll annotate your records with stuff like that. So you'll probably never serve in a higher than a ward calling, at that point. But,
right. So, maybe we do want to talk more about the reasons to resign as opposed to.
Well, let's finish out our thing. So I don't think we've fully made clear why we didn't resign. You said there were a couple big reasons.
Okay.
You talked about
family.
One
reason was the family, and the second reason was John. This was not my idea, but it made sense. I'm giving credit where credit is due. Said. Well, that's just one more thing that the church can control us on. Well, I'm not under their control. I will not let myself be under their control, and I will not, you know, do their little method of getting off the church rolls. And I'm done doing what they tell me I have to do. I guess there's sort of a good argument there, but on the other hand, if you don't tell the church that you don't believe, why would they take you off the records? You might just be sick. You might be depressed. I mean, there's lots of reasons why you wouldn't be going to church that wouldn't have to do with not believing. So it would be rude of them to take someone off their records just because they weren't going to church.
Yeah. So let's talk a little bit about the precedents. There's an important case that was from Mesa, Arizona called an individual named Norman Hancock. Before this time, it was the church's policy that there is no such thing as resignation, and many ex-Mormons will still run into this.
Right. The only way to get out of the church is excommunication. So that was the way.
So they went through the excommunication process with Norman Hancock. He sued and won, and the precedence that's been established. And I think it was another case. I think it was the Marina Guinn, G-U-I-N-N case versus the Church of Christ. And the bottom line is when you're in an organization like the church, all you have to do is say, I am no longer a member, and you are legally no longer a member. It's completely voluntary, and you do not have to submit to any sort of ritual or any process.
No, but they have to have record of that.
No, they don't have to. They don't have to do anything because
They do. Otherwise, how would you show that? Yes, I did say this, and therefore I shouldn't be on.
You don't have to show. There's no reason that you have to show that.
How would they know to take you off their records?
Okay, I've said they don't take you off the records.
How do they know not to include you in their membership?
Well, this is their So people say, well, I don't want the church to track me anymore. Well, I don't want any of those companies to track me, but it's fully in the rights of free speech and commerce and whatever the United States that any private organization can track you as much as they want. Anybody can take and put you on a roll, and they can give you some sort of religious title. They can say, this guy's a demon, this guy's an angel, whatever they want. And that's part of freedom of religion. You know, you can walk around and say, these people are going to hell and these people are going to purgatory. And all of that is well within free speech. So the church can keep tracking you as long as they want. They can say you're excommunicated or whatever, but they can't put you through that process. They can't hold you to that. But the church...
They can't make you go through a ritual. But I think that
they could do a ritual.
That you would have no legal precedence to say, oh, you guys still have me on your membership rolls, but, you know, 5 years ago, I told my friend I'm no longer a Mormon. You have to tell them in writing. That's usually how it goes, like with any kind of resignation.
The concern that I've always had, that I still have, is that, and the church has set it up this way, you have to go back to them one last time and obey their rules. You have to
it's
go back to
them. It's not just them. It's any organization.
You have to go back to them and submit to priesthood authority. You have to write them a letter. You have to do all this stuff. And they make people jump through hoops for a reason. It's this last pull. Yeah, this
manipulation.
Last, you know, in the zombie movies or whatever, you know, have to kill the bad guy. They always come up one last time. this is what the church is doing. So, you know, I
don't know, John.
For years,
I believed you for years, but you have to tell them in writing. You have to tell any organization you're resigning from in writing. Otherwise, you have no proof.
Okay, but I mean, as long as you want to argue it, what does it accomplish?
Oh, what will they do? They say that they will not count you in their membership. They will still keep a file on you.
So why do you guys all have such faith in the church on this front? Anyway, this is where I've been for years. It's
who's you guys?
Oh, well, you're not the only one who argues with me about this. I'm talking to all you guys who argue with me about this.
I'm not going to say that the church definitely doesn't count people in their membership who have resigned. But if you don't resign, so if you find out that they've been counting you in your membership after you've resigned, it would be big, huge egg on their face. Worse than baptizing, you know, Holocaust victims.
Maybe. So the positive, there's arguments, there's good arguments for resignation. So that's sort of the argument from I'm not going to play by their rules anymore. You know, we talked about the argument of not doing it because of family and those social repercussions. For a lot of us, and this was another driving force for me, is it was still my community. You know, when I move into a community and the people around me are all LDS, like I don't have any intent to alienate them. And the fact that because we're on the ward list, we might get invited to the neighborhood Easter egg hunt is a positive for me.
Yeah, but you know what they put in the eggs? Rocks and little pieces of paper that have scriptures on it. They don't put candy in the eggs. Who wants to pick up an Easter egg with a slip of paper in it?
All right. So by and by, I think we've come to the point in our lives, this is something else I want to talk about too. Mormonism is part of our identity. You know, I'm a seventh generation Mormon, and everybody I know in my family are either Mormons or Jack Mormons, really.
Well, except one person, you know.
Yeah, and of course, the church works really hard to keep this
everybody
whole thing
quiet.
In the dark, keep everybody quiet. But Mormonism is part of my identity. I've heard a lot of people identify themselves as cultural Mormons, and this is something I bought into for a lot of years, but I haven't for about four or five. Because when I started doing a sort of mental inventory, saying, okay, well, now that I reject all the teachings, all the metaphysics, the culture, you know, the structure. Because having been born in 1973, you know, I'm almost 40. The church has changed considerably socially since I was born.
The culture has changed.
Yes,
significantly.
The culture has changed. So like the way things run now in these like beige carpet colored churches that are cookie cutter set up and
correlation.
Everything is completely top down.
There's no working together as a ward to buy new curtains.
Right. You know, they've taken all the financial control away. They just everything has just been gutted. And so the question comes, okay, so if I identify myself as a cultural Mormon, what am I claiming ownership of?
What does that mean?
What does that even mean? And I've had this discussion with quite a few people, every answer they've given me that doesn't get shot down immediately usually has something to do with like Western values or American values or even just common human decency. Like I could be wrong. And here's the challenge. I'll throw down the gauntlet for y'all out there. I have not been told one value that is Mormon, that is uniquely Mormon,
that is actually valuable,
that is actually worth keeping. Everything that's uniquely Mormon always ends up in the dustbin. You know, there's a reason for that. I mean, the church, like all other organizations, co-op everything they see around them. That's good. But there's nothing for me that I say, this is something that I want to identify myself as a cultural Mormon. As a matter of fact, it's completely detrimental because anything that I find that somebody would glean from understanding me as a person by myself, identifying myself as a cultural Mormon, is incorrect. You know,
yeah.
It has no communicative value, at least in my case.
Yeah, but there is. So beyond just the fear of hurting our families more, for me, there is a part of me that is sad to put the final nail in the coffin and say I am not a Mormon.
It's awful. I mean, it was so much for Mormons. It's so much a part of who we are and what we do and how we see everything. It just colors every. You run just about everything through a Mormon filter, and taking that off is a long, drawn out, painful process
for most people.
I would say it generally takes a minimum of 1 month for every year you're in the church. And for a lot of people, it's 2 or 3 months for every year you're in the church, just to sort of deprogram that stuff, just to sort of not be constantly thinking about it. And you can see the progress of people who left the church. When they first get out there, they're angry. But let me be clear, that anger is left over from when they were leaving, because people talk about angry ex-Mormons. If you talk to Mormons lately, talk to them about their religion. They're all pissed off, too. So ex-Mormons are not more angry than Mormons. So I want people to stop identifying
angry
ex-Mormons, especially people using it to carve out middle ground. You guys who are trying to be middle grounders, stop calling ex-Mormons angry. I'm going to start kicking your ass. So
you'll see what anger
is. So there's anger on all sides of the fence. But people will discuss Mormonism from an internal perspective. Ex-Mormons never stop discussing Mormonism from an external perspective. So if you get together with a bunch of people who've been out of the church for 6 or 7 years, they won't be talking about the church that much, but they will talk about their aunt just recently tried to convert their 9-year-old, you know, who's never been to church.
Yeah, the interactions that they're still having with Mormons and Mormonism in their lives.
Because the only way to escape would be to completely divorce everybody in your family.
And to move to Madagascar.
To a completely different place where you're not going to run into it. But most of us, you know, grew up in the church. A lot of our friends are, then we don't throw away those relationships. Our family, our school, you know, my resume is forever branded with BYU on it. And there's no way I can escape that, for good or for bad. And to say, why don't the ex-Mormons leave the church alone? Because they can't. The church has made it that way. It can't be done. That they just and the church fully wants to get involved in things that they have no business getting involved in. You know, they want a seat on the liquor commission. Why? Who knows? Why don't they just live and let live? That's what they say all the time.
Because they want to control other people's morality. But how about good reasons to resign? Why resign?
Oh, okay. Well, I mean, there are a lot of good reasons to resign. I think the best reason I've ever heard to resign comes from usually ex-Relief Society presidents who say the church, the poor people in the church are responsible for everyone on that list. There's no way to take somebody off your membership, look on your membership and say, this person wants no contact. Like, there's no really official way to do that
If you can talk to the current Relief Society president, and they'll make a note of that and they'll remember. But, you know, a year later, you get a new Relief Society president, they're contacting you again. And the ward mission leader will come and talk to you about getting your kids back to church, getting them baptized, having missionary discussions. They don't want... They figure these people once believed, So it probably just takes some special spark, maybe a certain batch of cookies or something to bring these people back. And that's what they're going for. So you're always going to get contacted by your ward, and they will search you out if you move. They have a whole committee that searches out
when
they move.
Well, they'll keep tracking you when you move, even if you resign. But
I don't think that they will when you resign.
I don't have any problem. I don't have any problem clogging up the system from a corporate perspective. That might be a positive to not resigning. But you know, the poor local folks who own that, you know, you're gonna forever be, you know, some poor schmuck has to be assigned to be your home teacher and all that kind of stuff.
No, and I've had visiting teachers, you know, off and on ever since I've stopped going to church and stopped believing. And I tell them every time that I don't believe, but I'm happy to have them come, and I don't want to hear a lesson, and I don't want to do prayers, but I like friends. And so when I told my visiting teacher just last week when she came to visit me that I was planning on resigning next month, and that she wouldn't have to worry about, you know, coming and visiting me anymore, she said, well, I would still want to visit you. So, I mean, a lot of people say, well, I want my ward contact. I want people in the ward to contact me. I want to be kept up on neighborhood things, and I want to have people come visit me. But my point is, I don't think she's going to come back, you know, after my resignation is in. Because they have too many other things to worry about and things to do. But at the same time, why was she visiting me in the first place? Because she's supposed to. So, you know, do you want someone taking out time from their family to come do something that they wouldn't choose to do of their own free will?
Right, yeah.
Probably not.
Yeah, you unfortunately, even with no participation, sort of bolster the system in a little bit. And this is where you were getting at with the numbers. In a recent Washington Post interview, Michael Purdy, one of the spokeschurchmen, said, well, there's not a problem with people resigning because it's, in his words, a fraction of 1%. Now, you got to keep in mind, the church claims 14 million members. 1% of 14 million is 140,000 people. If there was 1/10 of that, 14,000 people a year resigning, that is hugely significant. And if you've worked in leadership positions in the church, you'll know that even the people who occasionally come out to church, only about 30% of those guys tend to hold temple recommends. And so you have a small group of people who do all the callings and do much of the work and fund much of the operation of the church. Then you have another mass of people who sort of live off the church. So from a corporate perspective, there's people who put into the pool and there's people who take out of the pool. So for them to put it in terms of raw numbers, counting people, you know, who are baptized 70 years ago in Madagascar or whatever. It's really
or Madagascar.
Yeah, is that our second pick on in Honduras? You know, and the church does things like they count every, if they've lost track of you, they count you till you're 110 because you might be alive.
Well, and they count as soon as you have a baby. If your parents are members, you are counted as a member at least until you're 18.
Right. So my two children who know nothing of the church, whatever, are part of the 14,000.
They are members.
14
quote,
million.
Members.
And they
They've
will
not
be
been
until,
baptized,
they're, until they're 18.
But they are considered members.
Yeah. Even though they're both over the age of baptism. So the church plays games like that. And
we all know, or probably most of us heard last month when the religious census numbers came out and the church was like, growth of 45% and people's jaws dropped
until they retracted. Then it was 18%.
No, well, what they said was, oh, well, before we were counting people who we were keeping track of, people who were part or assigned to a ward. Now they're counting every single member, whether or not you've stepped inside the church since you were, you know, 1 month old.
Right. The lost files. The church has huge number. They won't tell us exactly how many, but it's got to be millions of people. They just have no idea where they are, even if they exist anymore. And we know from the kiddie baptism rage during the 60s, 70s, and 80s that there's probably names on there that are fictitious people besides, because missionaries who are really hyper motivated to get baptismal numbers would sort of fudge the stuff.
So the point is, the church is already counting a whole bunch of people that they shouldn't be, and I don't want to be one more person that they shouldn't be counting.
Well, and the reason I brought up Purdy's quote is he can say, oh, well, only one fraction of 1% are resigning. And he's right, because people like me who give all those excuses for not resigning, we're playing into the church's hands.
Yes.
Because everyone who knows anything about the situation looks at that number and says, well, yeah, most people don't resign. They just walk away. So that tells you nothing.
You have to actually care quite a lot to put in the effort to resign.
You have to jump through hoops. Yeah.
Most people just stop going.
Yeah, you can't find any official instruction from the church at all on how to resign. You have to find it from ex-Mormon sites. They won't tell you how to do it.
Right. So how do you do
it? And people still will come up. You know, there's people who post stories, you know, every month where their bishop tries to excommunicate them or tells them they can't do it, or, you know, people still get a lot of guff about it. So how do you resign?
Yeah.
The best way, let me make sure the website is still up. The woman who used to run Mormon No More passed away
a few years ago.
Kathy.
I don't remember her last name.
She was an attorney.
MormonNoMore.com. And there's also MormonResignation.com. There's ex-Mormon. There's post-Mormon.
You can literally go to any... Yeah, Mormon No More is still up there. That gives you sample letters and tells you about the legal things and tells you what has to be done and what doesn't have to be done.
And actually, we've heard that an email method is the fastest.
Yeah, there's people resigning from email. And if you go to any of the standard Mormon boards, you know, post-Mormon or RFM, you know, exmormon.org, you can go to the Mormon Expression boards if you want and just say, hey, I want to resign. Anybody, and there'll be plenty of people who will walk you through the process. So,
and if you have children, like we said, they're still on the records. So if you or they want their names off the records, you have to include their names as well. And they have to sign if they're over 8.
And the what I understand, if you have a spouse who is still in and you want to resign the kids, my advice would just be wait till they're 18. It can be quite a battle to get that taken care of. If one of the spouses is still in and you want to have the kids resign, I'd say just wait that one out.
Well, I mean, it depends on what your believing spouse is tolerant of and what your child wants, but...
Okay, so that's how you resign.
Oh, and they recommend that you get it notarized and that you get it, what is it, you receive like a return receipt. It costs a dollar or two at the post office. You ask for a return receipt. It basically notifies you that they received the letter.
And I'm looking again at Mormon No More, and it has all that stuff. And
if you do it through email, like I said, people have said that they've gotten quicker responses that way. And actually, I'm going to do both. I'm going to do it through email, and I'm going to send a letter in.
Now, Zilpha, you and I were arguing a few minutes ago about the standard letter. This is their letter they have. This letter is my formal resignation from the church. Is effective immediately. I hereby withdraw consent to be treated as a member, withdraw my consent, blah, 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 blah. That's what the letter says. My letter I've been crafting is a little different, and it's. I don't think you're following my lead here. My letter says this is my intent.
Wait, you want me to copy your letter?
No, you don't have to. My letter says that this is my intent to resign, but should you want to, so please submit this to your local authority where we can battle it out.
Right. So you want to send your letter So you want to send your letter to the membership office, the main membership office, but they will send a copy of your letter to your bishop, who will then have to do some kind of like put something in the computer, and then he has to send it to the stake president. The stake president has to hold on to it for 30 days, and then he will do his thing in the computer and you're off.
Right. So most people say in their letter they don't want to be contacted. My letter says, I want you to contact me and try to talk me out of this.
Right, but they usually do...
But that's just for sport.
They usually send you a letter after they receive your resignation letter that says, this is a matter for local leaders, blah, 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 and they're going to contact you, blah, blah, blah. But if you don't do anything and your local leaders don't contact you, it's still going to happen in 30 days after the... stake president receives the letter. That's what it's supposed to happen.
Right.
So you don't have to talk to them.
Yep.
But I didn't know that about the 30 days until I was
Well, I've heard of people getting it done faster. They might be streamlining the process. I don't know.
Maybe.
So obviously we haven't resigned yet. And I was giving my opposition to it. I think Zilpha probably would have resigned years ago if I hadn't.
No, actually, I don't think I would have.
Really? So there was one time, I think 5 or 6 years ago, you actually crafted a letter.
Did I? Maybe I did, but I obviously didn't send it in. And I think part of that was, I wanted to do it with you, for one thing. And I was also a little bit scared to actually, like I said, put the final nail in the coffin about my Mormonism. But
so I don't think we kind of made clear why now. Why for you and I after all that time, why now? Why are we quitting at this juncture?
I think earlier this year, John, you were talking about how you no longer feel like a Mormon, you no longer think like a Mormon, you no longer can really empathize with the Mormon outlook.
I do not process the world anymore through Mormon eyes. And if you take the really when things came to a big head as being 2004 from us, that means it took us about 8 years,
which is significant to
reach that status.
But we're slow guys.
We're a little slow, and that might have artificially been propped up by our participation, you know, in the podcast or whatever.
Right. So maybe you saying that, and also you feeling the need to cut back from Mormon expression.
I think they're related. I think the end is near for me. That's a hard thing. It's been a big part of our lives for a long time, but it's a natural growth cycle, you know.
And just things with the big church, the way they count the membership and everything, combined with John's sort of finally feeling like he could let go as a Mormon thinker or whatever.
And I think there's that. There's also, and this relates to some other things going on that have been involved with the podcast. The church in my mind is thoroughly 100% corrupt, meaning whatever good there is in the church, it's because good people happen to be participating in it. I don't think the church particularly accomplishes anything. What the church does is it takes the good that you have, it takes it from you, it tells you you're no good without it, and then it gives it back to you with a price tag attached.
Well, and it uses your goodness to prop itself up.
Right. It builds itself on the back of its members, all the while telling the members that they're nothing, that they are criminals, that they are
naturally evil.
They're naturally evil, that without the church, the church is a big drug pusher, is what it is. It's going to get you hooked, and it's going to keep selling that stuff back to you. But it's worse. It's you know, because at least with cocaine, you feel euphoria every once in a while.
Oh, I think people feel euphoria in the church. I mean, that's sort of the why they use uplifting stories and super sad stories, because you get those feelings, those emotions. But I really want to not give the church any reason to count me anymore. I do not want to be counted. And I don't want to give them a legitimate reason to think that I want to be in their membership.
And I think, building on that, I do not want to give any legitimacy through my participation in a podcast that helps people live with a faith that is destructive and evil. So the fact that there's people out there who use the podcast to bolster their own self-esteem inside the church, I'm done with that. If Mormon expression helps people stay in the church, then morally I can't participate anymore. Now, I think that's a rare case. And I think we have demonstrated more than enough that the church is not true. But I don't want to be associated with any organization that helps the church. I don't want to be associated with any organization that helps people who help the church. The church needs to go away. The church is an evil fluence. It's sort of like I don't know, like the Nazi party or something. It's there are plenty of good people who benefit quite a bit. I mean, I hate to go to the Nazi example, but it's a great one. People come to me all the time. Their chief argument against me is they say, the church does me and my family good. Go watch a documentary about the SS. They lived wonderful lives. They had great schools. Their kids were raised really well. That Germany prospered underneath Nazi rule. And there's been all sorts of social movements that have built themselves on the backs of other people, on slavery or whatever, you know, going and bombing, you know, Eurasia or whatever. You can make for a better life. But just because you individually benefit from a system that's grinding people up does not morally justify it. And frankly, it makes you sound like an asshole because you can't just go and say, well, it's good for me. You know, everybody at the top of every pyramid scheme, it's good for them. Every Ponzi scheme works out for some people. And that's no moral argument for the justification of the church. And it's moral bankruptcy to be part of an organization that grinds people up socially, that psychologically sends them into a tailspin, that keeps them in prison, takes their money.
And then spends it on things like state-of-the-art law schools.
Yeah,
$4 million coming from, you know, poor countries where people haven't even seen a law school, have no opportunity to ever go to one. It just makes me sick.
Yeah, the whole thing. And I can't, because I'm no longer empathetic to personally being a Mormon, and I look at it from the outside and saying, all right, so they go give, you know, like a few years ago, they gave money to rebuild the Cathedral of the Madeleine. But in the meantime, they still have scriptures in there that say the Catholic Church is the whore of the world. And, you know that they play both sides all the time there. And yeah. I just can't be a part of supporting it anymore.
We can't.
Yeah, I didn't want to drag you down to hell with me.
So, when I decided to resign, I decided that after all that we've said and done, John and I, after all this time that we've spent talking and thinking about Mormonism, and I didn't want to just send in a letter quietly, you know, get a standard response, and that was it. That seemed very, it didn't seem like the end that was appropriate. So I have decided to organize a mass resignation, and it's going to be June 30th. This is not being organized by Mormon Expression or Whitefields. It's me who's organizing it. John is supportive of me.
for the most part.
So June 30th, 10 o'clock a.m. at Ensign Downs Park, which is at the base of Ensign Peak. We'll be gathering and we'll be bringing our resignation letters, those of us who are resigning. So this rally is for anyone who can support people who are resigning, not just for those who are ready to do it, but for anyone who wants to support the people who are resigning, because it is a difficult thing. There are ramifications. They're going to run into issues with their families, etc., because of this, and they need support. So if you've already resigned, come out. If you can't resign yet, but you wish you could and you support the cause, come out. And
if you completely disagree with us, please come out and protest also. We have the park reserved. We have our protest permit. We're going to have our porta potties and everything there.
Yeah. So we're going to collect the resignation letters, and those I would recommend should be a copy of your resignation letter. You should have a copy somewhere else. And I'm going to send an email.
So if you've already resigned, bring a copy of your old one.
Yeah, that'd be great too. So the more letters, the better. The more people, the better. We're going to have a Declaration of Independence from Mormonism, which is just basically a group document that says we no longer consider ourselves members of the church, blah, blah, blah. And it's just going to be a short one. I originally wrote a really long explanatory one, but for the signatures, it's just going to be a brief paragraph saying that we're done. And then we're going to march up to the Ensign Peak with banners and flags. So if you're coming, it would be great to bring a flag or a banner with you. It needs to be handheld.
So Ensign Peak, just to be clear, it's a little sort of knoll mountain on the north end of the valley, just sort of due north of the temple. And a couple days after Brigham Young and the first party came to Salt Lake Valley, they climbed Ensign Peak and then sort of blessed the valley and declared it in the name of the Mormons.
Well, it's behind the Capitol.
Up above the Capitol, north of the Capitol. So we're taking it back.
We're reclaiming Ensign Peak. And it's really, for me, the reason I selected that location is because the event is called Out of the Shadows and Into the Light. And I wanted it to be representative of us coming into the light, not hiding in the shadows, not sulking. You know, many ex-Mormons feel like they have to hide their non-belief. And I don't want us to have to do that anymore. I want to follow the example of our gay friends who came out of the closets and stopped hiding in the shadows, because the only thing hiding does is it lets the people who don't agree with us believe that we are evil people, because they don't know anyone. If you know someone who's gay, you know that they're not evil. If you know someone who has resigned from the church, you can then judge them on something besides just being, you know, an evil apostate. And Mormons, since the beginning, have not looked kindly upon apostates. Brigham Young at one point said that all the apostates in the valley should be driven out. He would attack one with a Bowie knife and, you know, kill him if he could. There's not a friendly vibe coming out of Mormonism towards apostates. And I want to change the way, I want people to be able to make choices about their religion without such harsh social consequences, family consequences. It needs to be a personal choice that can be seen that way and not seen as a vile, evil person just because you've chosen to leave the church.
Cult members, no matter what your cult is, divide the world up into three categories. There's members, there's potential future members, and there's ex-members, and everybody is one of those three. I think in our participation in this, and then what's coming next for us in our life, is to sort of grind that into the ground, that we no longer want to be identified through that paradigm. And to do so, as Zilpha's talking about, we have to sort of stand up and break through the paradigm. We have to quit playing to it and allowing the church to identify us in those categories. And I think what resignation does, although on the surface level, it seems like you're just still playing into that, but what you're doing is you're rejecting the entire system. And as people can see that there are good people who have left the church behind who still can live normal lives. And I was going to say a decent life. The problem is that Mormons define decency in such a way that you can't be decent if you leave the church. But we have to crush that paradigm, and we have to make our voice heard. So that is June 30th, Saturday, 10 a.m. at Ensign
Downs Park.
The way you get there is you drive up to the Capitol, and then you go around the right side of the Capitol, just follow the sort of rotunda around and head up. It's back up in the avenues. The park is up there.
Google Maps. Ensign Downs Park is on Google Maps.
Right. And then that's where the trailhead is to get up to Ensign Peak. It takes about 20 or 30 minutes, depending on how fast you go.
Yeah, it's really not very long. It's about 20 minutes, but it might be warm. We'll have water and cups, but you might want to bring a picnic for your family if after the hike you want to hang out in the park and talk with people. And of course, children are invited and encouraged to come along. This is a family event, and we're not doing this event out of anger or protest. We're doing it to support people who are resigning, which is difficult.
Yeah, and
to make it so that it's not a hidden thing.
We've contacted the press, and they're interested, but only if there's a significant number of people. So, like we said, if at all you're empathetic to the cause, even if you've already left the church,
come on
or
out.
Or you want to help make a little bit of a splash, you can come on out. And what we need to start getting is a sort of a committed count so we can let them know so that they send their reporters out. Zilpha, right. What's the best way to contact you as the director of this protest?
That is a good question.
You can
you can always friend me on Facebook, send me a message.
Or you can send an email to Zilpha at whitefieldseducational.org. That's your email here. It's probably the good way to get in contact with you. You can send one to mail@mormonexpression.com, and we'll make sure it gets to Zilpha also.
And I also have all of the information.
What's your website?
Well, I created a blog, so it's resignmormon.blogspot.com/2012. I don't know if you need all this stuff. /05/mash.
No, you just need the.
So you just need resign.blogspot.com.
It's resign? Resign?
No, sorry.
Oh, jeez.
Okay. It is resignmormon.blogspot.com.
Resignmormon.blogspot.com. And we'll have a link out from the Mormon Expression website so you can get there.
Yep.
So
maybe we'll see some of you.
Join us
out there.
It's time.
It'll be fun.
It's time to move on.
It's definitely time for us to move on.
All right. Well, as always, the discussion continues on the website at mormonexpression.com. You can participate in discussions. This podcast is a production of Whitefields Educational, which has this and other projects, and there's some new ones in the works to help provide accurate information about the church and those sorts of things. So you can check out that website and find ways that you can get involved, and there's other things that you can do to support the good work.
And that's whitefieldseducational.org.
Yep. And is there anything else going on? Now?
The essay contest.
Oh,
essays
yeah.
are due on the 1st, June 1st.
On June 1st.
So you only have a few days.
A week or so. Yeah, less than that. All right.
Thanks, John.
Good night, everybody.